given our needs, given the absolute necessity for growth, given the future, the truth is joining John Bonacieux is every bit as certain as death and taxes.
Death and taxes?
Yes.
Death and taxes?
Yes.
But an odd pairing.
It's just a saying, Mr. Black.
By whom?
You're not familiar with the phrase, in this world nothing is certain but death and taxes?
Well, I am now.
That little exchange is from the 1998 movie Meet Joe Black. Brad Pitt is cast as an unlikely Grim Reaper, and he's surprised and maybe even a bit tickled to discover that his own inevitability as death is commonly mentioned in the same breath with the certainty of taxes. And I can see why it might seem to be an overstatement. I mean, compared to death, taxes seem relatively minor. But remember, even the mighty have been felled by excursion into evasion.
What is this? If we can establish that any of these coded entries indicate payment to Capone, then we can put Capone away.
Yes, it might be tempting to sidestep the Treasury Department altogether. But if you watch enough Hollywood movies, from The Untouchables to The Firm to The Wolf on Wall Street, you'll notice a different lesson emerge. Don't evade taxes and risk jail. Secure a crafty accountant to keep more of your coins in your pocket while staying just on this side of the law. Heck, in 1994's Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne uses his pre-incarceration accounting skills to cheat death and eke out a little justice in a corrupt system.
If you want to keep all that money, give it to your wife. The IRS allows a one-time only gift to your spouse for up to $60,000.
Oh, tax-free?
Tax-free. IRS can't touch 1 cent. It's perfectly legal. Go ask the IRS. They'll say the same thing. But you do need someone to set up the tax-free gift for you. I suppose I could set it up for you. That would save you some money. If you get the forms, I'll prepare them for you, nearly free of charge. I'd only ask 3 beers apiece for each of my co-workers.
And apparently, the state of South Dakota is offering a masterclass in this powerful loophole lesson. Just a little over a month ago, an unprecedented global investigation leaked nearly 12 million financial documents to the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists in Washington and over 600 journalists around the world. Called the Pandora Papers, the documents give the public a glimpse into a shadow financial system benefiting the world's most wealthy and powerful. And among the most surprising is that the United States has become a major tax haven for foreign assets. The primary location for these assets?
Hail South Dakota, a great state of the land. Health, wealth, and beauty, that's what makes her grand.
Oh yeah, South Dakota is the new Cayman Islands. Out of the 200 trusts identified in the U.S. by the Pandora Papers, more than 80 of them were located in South Dakota. And the Pandora Papers show that over the past decade, the amount of money in these South Dakota trusts has more than quadrupled to at least $360 billion. But that might not even be the full extent of it. Some financial experts have estimated that as much as $1 trillion could be hiding in South Dakota's trusts. And that's where we start today. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. Casey Michel has authored a new book, American Kleptocracy: How the U.S. Created the World's Greatest Money Laundering Scheme in History. It's going to be published in just about a week. Thanks for joining us, Casey.
Thanks so much for having me, Melissa.
So what are the regulations, or maybe the deregulations, that led up to this moment in South Dakota?
Yeah, Melissa, that's really the kind of trillion-dollar question that we are dealing with right now. As best as we can tell, this transformation of South Dakota, which is, again, part of a far bigger transformation of the U.S. itself into this global leading offshore haven, again, with South Dakota, so few of us paying any attention to this transformation in South Dakota, you really kind of have to go back to the 1980s. This isn't something that happened overnight. This isn't something that happened yesterday. This is something that's really decades in the making, again, with so few of us paying any attention to this. But you know, you think back to the 1980s, you remember, especially in places like the American Midwest, in the American Rust Belt, you know, we had agriculture falling on hard times. You had manufacturing in the U.S. falling on hard times, and especially states like South Dakota that were so reliant on these industries. really falling off kind of an economic cliff, along again with a number of other states right here in the U.S. And so what we now know is that the leadership in the state, which was governed at the time by a guy named Bill Janklow, and he had this great nickname, Wild Bill. He was this kind of swaggering, you know, bigger than life politician. You know, he had an idea. He saw kind of an economic lifeline where others were still trying to bring manufacturing or agricultural jobs back. You know, Governor Janklow, he decided to do something else. And that was two things. One, he tried to attract, of all things, the credit card industry into the state of South Dakota. He ended up repealing the interest rate caps on credit cards. Again, you know, we think back 40, 50, 60 years ago, which is, it's almost kind of a foreign idea that there used to be these low caps on interest rates for credit cards. Now, obviously, we're talking about trillions of dollars of credit card debt. And Janklow said, you know, there's no reason that we need to have those credit card interest rates. Why can't banks just charge what they want in terms of interest rates? And by the way, they can come to South Dakota and do that. And lo and behold, some banks took them up on that. And that's one of the reasons South Dakota is the leader in the credit card industry. What we saw from that, though, is that Janklow realized what a success that could be, what a success these financial deregulations could be. And he saw something else. He saw there was another opportunity when it came to trusts. So what we're talking about South Dakota, we're talking about offshoring and financial secrecy in large, all these illicit and suspect and dirty money assets from abroad coming into South Dakota. We're talking not about the credit card industry, but we're talking about trust. No trusts.
Okay, Casey, hold on. I want to ask one thing. How do we know the money's dirty? I mean, in part, as I'm listening, I'm taking notes. Like, okay, you know, when your state has fallen on hard times, diversify, make some choices, get new industry. And if you're rich, then, you know, find a place to shelter your money. But does that follow that it is dirty money?
Certainly not all of it is dirty money. We know, for instance, that any number of Americans, successful Americans, American entrepreneurs, wealthy Americans who have built industries, who have built companies, have been taking advantage of the financial secrecy provisions in South Dakota. So I'm not saying that all of the money, all of this estimated up to $1 trillion of money that we now know is housed in South Dakota is dirty. But what we do know, and especially what we saw out of the Pandora Papers just a month ago, is that there's every incentive for anybody who has any kind of dirty money burning any hole in their pocket to flock not to the Cayman Islands, not to Switzerland or Panama, but to flock to the newest offshore haven in the world, and that is South Dakota. And again, this is what all those of us who've been researching this field, studying and investigating this transformation in the U.S., you know, we've been trying to ring the alarm bells about this for a few years, that again, there's every incentive for those narco traffickers, those arms traffickers, those oligarchs, those crooked politicians elsewhere, when they're looking to transform their money, looking to hide their money, looking to use their money without anybody being able to track it back to them. We know that South Dakota is now the perfect home for them. So when I say dirty money, we're not talking about the totality of everything in South Dakota. In fact, we only know a fraction of who's actually been taking advantage of South Dakota. But we do know that even within that fraction, we have rights abusers, we have those who are responsible for environmental crimes, we have corrupt or crooked politicians that are flouting local laws and moving and hiding their money for themselves, for their families, for their friends, and then being able to do whatever they want with it because nobody can track it back to them.
If I'm Average Joe South Dakotan, how did these deregulations that are allowing this new sort of influx of foreign dollars, how did it impact my life?
Well, you know what's funny, Melissa? If you're an average South Dakotan, this didn't actually end up impacting your life that much. This didn't bring in tens or hundreds of thousands of jobs into South Dakota. Heck, the South Dakota government doesn't even necessarily see any revenue from all of these trusts coming into the state and all of these figures coming into the state. What we saw is that white-collar accountants, white-collar financial managers, white-collar lawyers, this kind of upper crust, well-educated, well-trained cohort of professional class South Dakotans. Those were the ones that really benefited. So we're not talking about the farmers. We're not talking about those who actually lost their jobs in the manufacturing base. What we saw instead was an influx of white-collar professionals into the state. Again, these are the trust managers. These are the accountants. These are the lawyers that then are able to, in this case, bankroll local politicians, bankroll local political forces, and really ingratiate themselves with the South Dakota legislature. You know, in political science, they have this term captured state. Mm-hmm. When you have local legislators that are effectively betrothed to or intimately connected with a single industry, you know, think of oil and gas in Texas, or think of, you know, in this case, shell companies in Delaware. What South Dakota now has is it's been effectively captured by the wealthy, powerful clique that runs the trust industry in South Dakota. So ironically enough, we're not, again, talking about tens of thousands of jobs that will affect the average South Dakotan. We're talking about those who are most closely connected to the South Dakota legislature that have been benefiting for years and years and years. And again, attracting and incentivizing the inflows of all of this questionable, suspect, anonymous, and in many cases, as we now know, dirty money into the state. And there's no reason to think that that won't continue for the foreseeable future.
And typically, Casey, with a captured state, partisanship doesn't matter, and nor does ideology. It doesn't really matter what party the mayor of Detroit is from. The mayor of Detroit is always going to be captured by the auto industry, is kind of the claim, right? Is that similar here? Do we see across ideology, across party, that capture in South Dakota?
We have seen that exactly for decades. It doesn't matter what side of the political aisle the legislators are on. Time and time and time again, across the political aisle, these legislators have supported the growth of the expansion of and the entrenchment of this trust industry. I mean, I think a great case in point for that is one of the things the governor did is not only did he create the incredible deregulatory moves, but one of the things that he did, which is frankly kind of a genius move on his part, for however horrific the outcome of this has been afterward, is he actually created what is called a trust task force. So when we're talking about captured states, it doesn't get more kind of in your face than this trust task force, because who are the people on this task force? You have the state legislatures, some of them in the state house, in the state senate, and then on the other side of the task force, you have those professionals that are running the trust industry. So the task force is kind of a meeting of the minds, where you have the professionals in the trust industry directly recommending, directly telling the legislators what specific policies should they implement, what specific bills should they pass, and what specific deregulations should they make sure to implement so South Dakota can still remain at the head of this explosion of the offshore economy here in the U.S.
Okay, so, you know, again, if I think about television or movies, I'm thinking about the bad guys are on their boat in the Cayman Islands, or maybe they're hiding money in Switzerland or Bermuda. I guess I can't imagine them out, in the Badlands in South Dakota.
Well, you know, what's funny, Melissa, is the beauty of South Dakota, similar to a couple other states that have also really refined the practice of offshore wealth here in the U.S., but really the beauty of South Dakota is these guys never have to set foot in the state of South Dakota. They never actually have to go to, you know, Sioux Falls or to Pierre in the capital. All they have to do is make a phone call. All they have to do is send an email, or maybe even better yet, hire an American lawyer or a South Dakota lawyer to do that for them. And then, oh, by the way, add that added level of secrecy with the attorney-client privilege. So when you say you can't imagine these guys out in the Badlands, Melissa, you're exactly right. They never go to the Badlands. They never go to South Dakota. They just use their computer. They use their phone to set something up right there in the state. And again, the state has made it so, so, so easy for them to do so. All they want to do in South Dakota, all the legislature wants to do, is make it as easy and quick and simple a process as possible for these oligarchs, for these kleptocrats, for these criminal or corrupt figures abroad to move their money, to house their money, to launder their money, and then be able to enjoy their money for as long as they want without anybody else being able to track it back to them.
Okay. Is this fundamentally different than the ways that wealthy people and wealthy corporations have been hiding their money kind of forever. Like, is this just an outrage because we don't have the same cash they do?
You know, what's funny about that, Melissa, is that you are in so many ways exactly right. Or you're hitting on a specific reality and dynamic in the kind of growth of the global offshoring economy. And again, when we're talking about the global offshoring economy, we're talking about an estimated tens of trillions of dollars right now. We're talking about an offshoring economy with the equivalent GDP of something like China. So it's almost kind of an offshore superpower. And you think of these traditional offshore havens, again, the Caymans or British Virgin Islands, Switzerland and Panama, that have been really providing so many of these similar services. And again, South Dakota is not the only jurisdiction that provides, in this case, anonymous perpetual trust. We see this elsewhere. But what happened in places like South Dakota or Delaware or Wyoming or other parts of the U.S. is that American legislators or South Dakotan legislators, they realized that there is this incredible geyser of illicit, suspect, dirty money that is just erupting around the world and looking for a home. And what they realize is that you have the marriage of a few different things, the marriage of American private property rights, you have the American legal regime, and then even beyond that, you have South Dakota as a sovereign state. You know, we still have a federal polity here in the U.S. South Dakota can create its own regulations. It can create its own kind of financial architecture to attract that. So what we really had, and again, this is another political science term, is a race to the bottom, not only among American states, but among all of these global offshore jurisdictions, a race to see who can provide the most secrecy, the most protections, the most, as another journalist said, potent force field for hiding your wealth for yourself, for your family, for your children, for your friends, for the rest of your regime, for as long as you possibly want.
Who else is in the race?
Well, certainly here in the U.S., we have a number of states. We have, again, South Dakota on the anonymous trust side. But when we're talking about things like anonymous shell companies, which is, again, a very popular building block of the broader offshoring architecture, you got to think of states like Delaware. You got to think of states like Wyoming, states like Nevada. Again, some of these smaller states that maybe don't have as much natural resources or industry, but that nonetheless realized that, again, there's trillions and trillions of dollars floating around the offshore world, looking for a home, looking to be hidden and anonymized and laundered. And again, you have all these American states that realize they can tap into that. They can provide new jobs for certain professionals. They can, as we see in certain states, even take commission of some of that money that comes in to help fund state budgets. So they can even go beyond that and begin cutting taxes elsewhere for constituents. So you have this dynamic that builds upon itself. And again, we see this in the U.S., we see this in other offshore jurisdictions elsewhere, but it's the same story time and again. It's these smaller states, smaller jurisdictions that realize they have the actual legal and financial power to create this kind of architecture to hide all of this money. I mean, it's really more money than you could kind of imagine. It's too big to see in many ways. And we're only just now learning about the depths to which South Dakota has sunk and who's been taking advantage.
Does the federal government have any incentive to step in and regulate this?
The short answer is yes, and that's for a few reasons. You know, if you think about the federal government, you know, the U.S. still likes to position itself as this kind of global anti-kleptocracy leader. In many ways, the U.S. is. You know, it was the first country to criminalize the bribing of foreign officials. It was the first country to criminalize money laundering in and of itself. And I know certainly the Biden administration and many in Congress would like to make sure that the U.S. is still seen as a leader in the fight against corruption, in the fight against offshoring. You know, it's tough for American officials to look foreign counterparts in the eye and say, you need to clean up your offshoring sector, when all they have to do is come back and say, well, what about Delaware? What about South Dakota? You know, that's one dynamic. But the other one is that, you know, the more this offshoring world continues to exist and expand, the more places like South Dakota continue to kind of feast at this trough of suspect and dirty money. That dynamic, that can't last perpetually. Something is going to break, because what you have is populations in developing countries that are watching their crooked or corrupt political figures loot education budgets, health budgets, infrastructure budgets, really decimate local populations and soak up so much of the wealth that should be for those populations. We know what that leads to. That leads to domestic instability, that leads to revolution, that leads to civil war, that eventually leads to national security concerns for the U.S., or it leads to immigration crises that, as we see right here in the U.S., do impact those of us here in the United States of America. So you have also these national security concerns that are absolutely going to come and are absolutely going to accelerate because of what South Dakota has transformed into. So yes, Melissa, absolutely the U.S. federal government has an interest in cleaning this up, and we're finally beginning to see signs of them beginning to do something about it.
Casey Michelle, Casey's new book, American Kleptocracy, How the U.S. Created the World's Greatest Money Laundering Scheme in History, is going to be published very soon. Be on the lookout and be sure you read it. Casey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Melissa.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.